Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm John.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? The first rule is agree, always agree, and say yes. The second rule is not only say yes, but yes and. The next rule is make statements. And finally, there are no mistakes, only opportunities. So those are actually the rules of improv. But I thought it was appropriate because I think a lot of that applies to role playing, and people that don't yes and make very difficult role players sometimes.
Yeah, I think that it does help to have a sense of improv, but it also depends on the kind of people that you're playing with. Mm-hmm. Because if you're playing with people that care less about the story or the character interactions and more about like action or stats and stuff, then they might not be well versed in that.
Oh, that's true.
And they might like interrupt you and say like, no, that didn't happen, or like other kinds of just things that break the flow.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you're used to playing with people who really do care about the story mostly and see role playing like that, then yeah, it's a bit different, and you probably should do more yes and things like that. But some people just like, I don't know if it's a lack of social skills or something. Like that's probably not it, because it would be easy to say like, oh, these people are gamers, so obviously they don't have this sense of social skills. But I think that it just sort of comes down to like, what's your kink in terms of like role playing games or tabletop games?
Yes, yeah, that's true. And so that voice that you're hearing is John. So John is with me this week, and we met first playing Netrunner, right? I think
I don't think it was Netrunner, because when we met, I wasn't playing Netrunner yet.
Ah, okay. So
we met through Alan, because I used to teach similar. I had a similar teaching job to Alan, and so we met through some work stuff. And then I moved closer to Osaka, and Alan was living in this area. And then he invited me, like, oh, I've got this tabletop game thing I go to, like this RPG thing. And then so I started coming to like the monthly RPG sessions where we were playing. I forget what we played first. We didn't play Monster Hearts first. We played a couple things first, and then we started the Monster Hearts Season 2 that Alan was running.
Right, right.
And like, so that's how you and I met.
Okay,
and that's how I met Chris and all the other people that have probably been on this podcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, I was trying to figure out which came first, because I know we did some Netrunner, but I know it also has like the 5e attempt, our stumbling.
Oh, yeah,
in the
Undertale. Yes, we did try that.
And but the things that we've had a lot of fun with is Monster Hearts. Yeah, definitely. And I've got to say, when I know you're going to be at the table, I always look forward to the session, and I really enjoy your sense of humor and everything you bring to the game. It's very nice to have you in the group and involved in the games.
Thank you. I try to do stuff. Yeah, it's different like as an MC, like in the Monster Hearts parlance, or like the GM, like, which is what I was doing in our most recent campaign, where I would have thought, because I didn't actually like GM a lot or MC a lot or plan a lot of things when I was playing role-playing games before, like in high school. And I didn't really play any tabletop or role-playing games in like university. It's so, like, it was my first time as like a serious like GM, and I was really nervous, because it's like, oh, all these people, like, they have a podcast,
right?
They talk about games. And it's like, I still in a lot of ways feel like a poser, because there was a period in my life where I didn't play games, and I haven't played like enough games, or I don't play often enough. And so I will say like that I might not have gotten back into games as much if I hadn't been playing with our group.
Oh, nice.
Because just the experience of playing is like so much of what I want out of role playing, and like even stuff that like wasn't happening when I was playing in high school, like it's sort of I was like, you guys were able to show me like, oh, this is what role playing can be when you have like these kinds of people who are interested in these kinds of things,
right? Right.
So like, so I will credit you guys or the other players with like showing me like, oh, you can just do these things, and it can be a very creative outlet, like playing or GMing. And it doesn't have to, you don't have to feel so nervous, because there's going to be somebody at the table who's going to help you. So like when I was emceeing Monster Hearts, it was very nice to have Chris there, who knows a lot about Monster Hearts, because it's like I could, whenever I didn't know how something might go, I just like, oh, like, Chris, how do you think this might go?
Right.
Sounds good. All right, let's go.
Yeah, that helps a lot. And Chris is always introducing kind of new systems, is a real fan of like indie role playing. So
yeah,
brings a lot of interesting systems and has us try things that maybe we never would have tried before, like the Death Watch session that we played, the Warhammer.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I'm not, I only know a few things about Warhammer, and never played any of the Warhammer like tabletop games. So it was all new for me, but I always enjoy like, yeah, I do enjoy that Chris always brings new stuff, because it's new things to talk about and new ways to think about role playing and how the mechanics fit the kind of game that you want to have.
Mm.
And so, like, even if it's something we only play once, it's always just fun to examine, like, well, this game has this theme, and how do the mechanics that we're working with support that theme, or how did we like this or that? And so, like, even in, like, the other games that we play, I think that all of those things are really valuable.
Mm-hmm. I think that's good. And I've really enjoyed the kind of wide range of systems and things that we've tried just with the group here. Even though we do keep going back to things like Pathfinder and D&D, I think it's good to branch out. And
yeah, so, I mean, from my perspective, we don't, because I mostly play in the more story-focused games. Mm-hmm. And so for me, there's been a lot more of the games where the role-playing is, like, systematized, where you've, like, instead of most of the rules being about combat, it's sort of most of the rules govern character interactions or how to resolve disputes between characters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also incentivize characters, like, doing things or doing anything.
Right.
Whereas, like, if you, not to say anything too bad about D&D, but, like, if you're a player for D&D, it's very easy to just, like, sit back and do nothing because there's not a lot of in-world incentive to do so many things.
That's true.
Whereas in a game like Monster Hearts or other kinds of games that systematize that story aspect, that you're incentivized, you're kind of pushed to do interesting things and to bounce off the other characters in a way that in D&D, I think it's a little bit easier to be a lot more like selfish with your character, where it's like, my character wants to do these things that they want to do, and you're not sort of pushed toward doing any kind of specific thing or anything in any real direction. And so, like, for D&D, it's possible that you could have just people, like, split up or something, or just have a big argument about which direction to go, like, in the world or whatever. And in the more story-focused games, I think that, like, that arguing about where to go would be the point of the session, maybe. Like, that's an interesting interaction. And so not treating player conflict as either, like, you guys have to be fighting or you have to all get along and tell a story together. Whereas in some of the games that are story focused, it's like all character interactions are good and valuable and meaningful, and we want to make sure that all the players know that, and that it's just, the goal is just for players to kind of bounce off each other, and that's the story, rather than, like, whatever goal that the GM set or whatever.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a game like Monster Hearts 2, it's really hard to, you can't railroad it. You can't actually get the players to go in any specific direction, because it is all just the interaction. It's just they're making so much of that story. And that was a real, the first session that we played of Monster Hearts, I was really amazed by that dynamic, about how it was such collaborative storytelling, and we ended up someplace I never imagined. My character ended up so different than I thought they would be. Like, my original conception changed so much just because of how they bounced off of people, just like you would be in high school, you know, to sell your
family. Yeah, and, like, I was playing a character that ended up punching another character's mom in the face.
That's right.
Like, in the heat of some moment at a police station. And starting that campaign, I wouldn't think that, like my, I knew my character was kind of a shitty teen, but I didn't have anything like that in my head. But then there was just this moment that happened, and I was just, like, staring at my character sheet, and it's like, it seems like my character would do this. And so, like, let's do this and see where this leads us. And so, like, I think that's a good point of, like, you don't have a specific goal, but then somehow you manage to make progress through something and be at some different place that nobody at the table, no single person at the table really imagined where you would be, but it just became that because of all of the interactions.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Talk a little bit about your kind of early experience. Like, what was your high school or junior high school, you know, tabletop role playing? What did you do?
So I got into Dungeons and Dragons when I was in high school or junior high school. It was whenever the third edition kind of reboot came out. And my friends and I, we had all heard about, like, AD&D and, like, D&D, and we'd, like, seen it in movies and stuff, and we'd all been playing, like, video games for our whole lives. And then, like, this reboot came out, so, like, we all picked up books and we all, like, started to, like, play and not really know anything about role playing really, or how things work. And then there was a vacuum repair shop in my town that also doubled as, like, a Magic the Gathering card shop and, like, tabletop game shop, because the very right-wing owner of it really liked like tabletop games.
Wow.
And so the stock of the store was like his personal collection. And so all this like weird stuff, and he would like kind of get the things that would sell, like the Magic the Gathering cards, like those would come into stock. Mm-hmm. But then like there would be all this other weird stuff too, like stuff just that he was interested in, or like he bought and then like had in his house for a while, then got tired of, and then put a price tag on and right. took it to the vacuum shop. He was really into some of the older role-playing games, and he was also very into Star Wars. Mm. So he got all of the teens into Star Wars D6.
Oh, right.
And so we played a really long like a campaign that was probably a year and a half long of Star Wars D6. And then he had some other friends that were really into like werewolf and mage. Mm-hmm. And we played some pretty long campaigns of that.
Wow.
And then we also played a bit of Shadowrun.
Oh, cool.
And so like I got a pretty good like swath of gaming experiences, and there were a few things in there sometimes, like when Mage Knight was a thing, we played some of that.
Right.
And we all kind of played Magic. So like, and that was high school, and then for some reason when I went to university, I just didn't do any of it.
Mm.
And I don't really understand why, but I was changing a lot as a person
uh-huh.
during yeah. university. And so it just didn't seem like as important of a thing.
Mm.
Even though I'd always liked it, like I was more trying to figure out like, hey, where do I fit in the world rather than right. like what kind of like tabletop games do I want to play? But then, yeah, thanks to Alan, after graduating university and then moving to Japan and teaching and moving to Osaka, like Alan kind of getting me back into the tabletop game stuff, I've been able to play a lot like more stuff and things that are newer, and like seems like time has moved on.
Mm,
and
mm-hmm.
it's really interesting to me that the kinds of games that in high school my friends and I were sort of dreaming of, like, oh, what if you had a game where you just didn't roll any dice, man?
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
like, it's all about the cooperative storytelling, man. And yep. then it turns out like, oh, those games, they exist now. And
right.
then even better mm-hmm. is that those games exist, but also games that systematize the story elements, like they gamify those instead of gamifying just combat. And for me, like liking video games a lot, I'm always thinking about sort of game systems and how things incentivize players to do certain things, mm-hmm. and especially things like ludonarrative dissonance in games. Like, well, the game like wants me to do this, but actually all the systems in the game actually incentivize me to do this other thing
mm-hmm.
that's not obvious. Like sort of places where you get like clashes between game systems and themes. And whereas there's a lot of role-playing games and tabletop games now that are a lot better about putting those two things together, where the description, the writer of the game puts in the introduction, mm-hmm. sort of the systems support that a lot better than maybe games in the past.
Yeah, good point. And just based on, you know, D20 or whatever they had become accustomed to, they're just building off of that. How can I do this with that kind of D&D engine or type mechanic? So do you think that video games have gotten, I mean, I guess some indie games have, but have gotten to the point where they are as far along as tabletop, as far as player agency and kind of how they can react to the system instead of just, you know, using the system or the engine, I guess?
I don't know. I think it depends on the kinds of games that you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the games that are like the video games that are most successful with it are games that don't really try to tell stories so much.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, like I really like the Dark Souls series
right.
and those games from Software. And the thing that I notice is that those games do have a plot,
mm-hmm.
but it's sort of like a plot you could write on an index card.
Yes.
And the thing that's really developed in those games is the theme and the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you get a really strong sense of theme and the world in those games. And the reason that's important is because in terms of like narrative, you have a big problem with video games that players have agency. They can go somewhere or not go somewhere mm-hmm. or not see the thing you wanted them to see.
Mm.
And whereas that's a problem in very like narrative focused games. But if you shrink what the narrative should be
mm-hmm.
and then you fill the world with themes and hints as to what the world's about, then players can really experience it at their own pace.
Mm.
And it's kind of like, it's not really emergent gameplay, and it's not really players making their own story, because players do kind of follow the same sort of path through the game, because you have to in order to beat the game.
Mm-hmm.
But what players what each player comes away with can be very different depending on the items, item descriptions they read, or if they found an item or didn't find an item, or they like didn't notice a thing, or versus the players that did. And so like everybody that plays Dark Souls or Demon Souls can play that game, and each of them can come away with a slightly different experience, even though it's not randomly generated, which is also like another approach that video games have taken. Like, and some games are like heavily randomized now, which is another approach that games have taken, try to expand that possibility space and to sort of fix the problem of the fact that players have agency. And I think that that's been really good. But it also depends on what kind of games you want to play, because I think that there's also some very good, very successful, like narrative focused games. So it's kind of like similar to how in the tabletop game space, you have games that focus on different elements and games that are more story focused or games that are more combat focused. And that, I think that there's a better understanding now of different designers and different players want different types of experiences. And like, and these are the tools that we have available to meet those needs. And so you have more genres of games now, and they sort of, they can kind of fit neatly of, oh, this one's a roguelike or this one's a role-playing game, and people do try to like fit them. But in terms of experiences, I think that there's a much wider breadth of experiences now in both video games and tabletop games that it's a lot of fun because you can play what you're in the mood for.
Yeah, variety is really nice. And especially with tabletop role-playing, you can play a game that fits a group. Like there are some groups that are just not going to enjoy certain games. And so I think that's really nice. Well, one thing that I wanted to bring up as possibly a future topic, like an expanded topic for the podcast, something that I read on Twitter was somebody talking about defying the GM, saying no. So in a game session, your character dies, you know, you do something that endangers your character and they actually die. The dice say, well, yeah, your hit points are gone and you have died. Is it okay as a player to defy that and say, no, that doesn't happen. This doesn't happen to my character because I don't allow it to. The tabletop is kind of there's kind of a social contract of how you interact, and the storyteller, the GM, the DM is telling you how things go. As a player, are you allowed to do that?
So I'm going to break one of the first rules that you set out at the beginning.
Yes.
And I'm going to ask you, what do you think?
I think you really should yes and kind of roll with things. I think saying no and being completely negative at any point in role playing, even if it's going to take your character out, you can fail or you can die in a story, or like, you know, with a story making.
Like those are things that happen in stories.
Yes. Yeah. Right. It does. Those things do happen. And that I think you should, you know, you should allow that to happen and not be so attached to character or be so involved. There shouldn't be so much ego or narcissism in what you're doing that you can't just let go. And for the sake of the group, for the sake of the story. Okay. Yeah. He died. You know, my character didn't make it. He was unsuccessful. And how does that affect the story? And how does that also affect the surviving characters? Yeah. I don't agree that you should be correcting the story just for, that's not the kind of story I want to be involved with.
Yeah, I think it depends on like the situation of what happened. But I think, in my opinion, it's generally really shitty in games when a character dies to a die roll. Like, that's just not a lot of fun. That people want their character deaths to have meaning. And a roll gone bad doesn't have a lot of meaning.
That's
like
a good point.
And you can make meaning of it in terms of a story for the game, but it's better if, and this also doesn't mean, by the way, that GMs should just randomly kill characters for story reasons,
because
that's also really bad and awful, but that the choice of character death should kind of be a decision between like the player character, the GM, and all of the other players. If you're going to have this character like be at death's door, like, is there a way for the other characters to go and potentially save them? Use it as some way to do something in the story. If you have just death for death's sake of, oh, my character had a bad roll and now they're dead and now I have to roll another character and come in as a different character, I don't think that's very interesting or a lot of fun. Whereas if the character death is in some way meaningful and then everybody else is an accomplice in this character's death, then that's a lot more fun. But I think like character death is kind of the most extreme version of it.
Yeah, I think so.
Like there's a lot of smaller interactions that I think would fall under the umbrella of the GM wants to do something, but the play, like a player doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that gets into kind of group dynamics and how to be a good GM. And in general, probably GMs should stay away from forcing any kind of action on player characters, just because there's already a driver in that seat at that wheel. And
oh, that's true.
Players don't want backseat driving of their characters. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, I would consider just a sort of random GM to have the kind of backseat driving of the cooperative narrative that's going on.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, and hopefully a good GM won't let that happen, or they can make it meaningful, you know, so that it's a failure that has some importance or some significance and isn't just that, oh, look what the dice said. And to be clear, we're not talking about players being uncomfortable, things like safety tools or X cards where somebody doesn't want to do something because personally it makes them uncomfortable or it affects them on an emotional level. We're just talking about things like in the game, I think of this about my character and I don't want that to happen to them because, you know, I'm so attached to this particular character that we've been playing. I guess that's always something that's going to come up because the longer a campaign goes, like the more precious, you know.
It's unavoidable.
Right, right. So it will be one of those things. But I think giving it meaning or just finding a satisfying way for that to happen, I think is important.
Yeah, and I think that's something to discuss at the beginning of a campaign, maybe, in a way that's probably not discussed so much, because at the beginning of a campaign, you discuss a lot of things about, you know, what the goals of the GM are, or what the setting is, and maybe what like character backstories are.
Right.
But I don't think people very often have discussions about, like, what does death mean in this campaign? And people have assumptions about what death means in different game systems. But in terms of a campaign, each character, each player brings their own notion of what death means or how rare it should be.
Yeah.
And maybe there needs to be explicit discussion of that. Or as a GM, you need to do something extreme, like the way that, like, TV shows or movies do, where you have a character die in the first session or something. Like, you show that, like, oh, life is not, like, you set some sort of baseline of, in this campaign, life is not precious.
Right.
You will lose your character. Half of you at the end of this campaign will be playing different characters.
Yeah.
Or you could say, you could do the opposite kind of thing, which is just like, but I would want the GM in this case to have some sort of story reason for this, to be like, oh, actually, you all are just sort of preternaturally gifted with some amazing luck that you're not going to die. Right. Or you all have your party somehow has like three amulets of resurrection and like something like that, where there's an understood sense between the GM and all the player characters of what death of a player character means.
Yeah, and I think that people are a little bit, if your experience is only, you know, computer role-playing games or someplace where you have save points and things where your actions and your decisions aren't so final, you know, they don't have such weight to them, where you just reload the previous save, that I think that for some people that changes the idea of, well, you know, if this doesn't work out, then, you know, we'll just...
Or like the idea that, like in those, like video games, death is most often a failure state.
Right.
Like it's a outcome, the player does not want,
right,
and it seeks to avoid at every cost
because
they don't want to replay something, or it's just not what's done in that game.
Right, right.
Whereas, yeah, I think that's maybe something that tabletop games could pick up a bit, is that it does feel a bit like that tabletop games or role-playing games are kind of in that boat to a certain extent of player characters are really precious, and death is definitely a failure state. And there's like things that the GM can do and the group can do to mitigate that, like, oh, re-roll and then come back in, or like make a new character and come back in. But that, well, this is something we want to avoid because we put a lot of work into our characters.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that's part of the reason why I really like the Alien RPG that we're playing now, where the characters aren't so precious. You're not spending a lot of time thinking about character backstory because it's handed to you. And I think some people might find that a bit uninteresting or limited. But to me, I really like it because I like all of the hints and the ways that I'm being pushed to play my character. Because without that, if I'm just like forced to say like, oh, I'll make a new character, and I'm given the choice of like all of the classes and roll all of the stats and like do all of the backstory, over time I'm probably going to end up only playing a certain set of characters because those are the ones I like to play. Whereas in the Alien example, being handed something and say like, oh, you should play this, like this, like you still get to decide all the details, like how those things play out for your character, but it pushes you in a direction that I think is very interesting and I tests you as a role player. Like, do you really like role playing or do you like only role playing a certain kind of thing? Mm. And so for me, I really like just the general act of role playing and bouncing off the other players. And so that for me, that's really interesting. And you also get to see people that you play with a lot, maybe play a character they don't usually play either.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you don't have any idea what to expect because like, maybe if you play role-playing games a lot with them, you would think, oh, they're playing this kind of character. Okay. Yeah. And I think I can anticipate what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like in Alien, like I have no idea what any of the people are going to do because I haven't played very much with two of them.
Right.
And,
right.
Like, and Chris is just playing something completely different. So.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. And speaking of the Alien RPG, that the last session of that is happening tonight. So we'll be streaming that. Of course, this is going to be up after that fact. This is not going to be edited and posted until we've completed that. But take a look at the archive either on Twitch or YouTube for the session 4 of the Alien RPG. So this type of game that we're playing, it's pre-generated characters, and it's what they call the cinematic adventure, cinematic starter adventure for this system. So it's just kind of getting you used to the system. We have kind of a limited, I don't think we have the full rule sets. It's supposed to be structured like an Alien movie, like there probably will be one survivor and it's fast and dirty and kind of play thing, do things that you probably wouldn't do, risking your character for the sake of the story. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And one last thing I wanted to mention, just a Kickstarter that went live just recently. And I think they funded in a minute. It was when they've gotten pretty good at this. It's Awakened Realms. So we played previously their Nemesis game, which is basically an Alien setting. So Awakened Realms is doing Aetherfields. So Aetherfields is a what they call a dream crawler. It's like tile based. So every time the world is different, and you're playing a dreamer in this world, and you're moving through this kind of surreal landscape. It's either co-op or a campaign adventure, a solo campaign adventure for 1 to 4 players. So everything changes as you play the game. And the one mechanic that I really like about it is it uses masks. So you have a kind of an archetype, like an explorer or a crafter or something in this dream world. And you pick up each round a mask, and the mask just has a title, like the devil or the defier or something. And you don't know what mechanically that effect has, but you can only choose, you have to choose a different mask each round and only choose it based on the name of it and how you think that might act. And so on the opposite side of the mask itself, it tells you mechanically what that does. This gives you the ability to do this or +1 to this or whatever, but you never show other players that you're only showing them the mask. So especially in a multiplayer game, it would be very interesting because they have little stands and you put the mask up there. So you'll get this idea of maybe what you want to do or what benefits you want as you're progressing through this. And because it's co-op, you kind of want to make things happen together and kind of balance like who has what role at what time. So it's tile-based and miniatures, of course, because Awakened Realms originally was just a miniature studio. But the miniatures are really gorgeous, really elaborate, complicated, gorgeous miniatures. And they do a nice job of producing those. And they're doing them in like PVC, not resin. So they're detailed, but affordable. Yeah, so previously they did this War of Mine, Nemesis, and their title that just came out is The Tainted Grail. So this is their newest game. And the nice thing that they do, if you have ever supported a previous game, is they give you a little gift that is promotion for the next project. So they'll tease you with the cards or a coin or something like this is what we're working on next. And it does really keep you like, you know, involved in kind of what they're doing next. So we'll put a link in the description and check out Aetherfields on Kickstarter for the next month. So John, if people want to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
They should do that through Twitter. My name is @LabonteUrlaely, and you have probably no hope of spelling that made up name that came from Diablo.
How nice.
Way long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so you should just look at the Idle Red Hands Twitter, and there will be probably a Twitter post for this podcast.
Right.
And also a Twitter post when the last session for Alien goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And so my Twitter will be on that, and you should click it, and you should click the follow button if you would like to hear some things about academic software development.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure there's a huge audience, a lot of crossover. I think the Venn diagram for this podcast and academic software is...
Yeah, there's trans rights, academic software, and that's pretty much it.
Okay. And of course, Idle Red Hands, you can find them at idleredhands.com, and follow us on Twitter. If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, support what we're doing, and suggest future topics, future games, or get involved in games we're playing and things we're doing, patreon.com/idleredhands. Yeah, that's it for this week. So we'll be back again next week. And thank you, John, for joining me. And,
no problem. It was fun. I talked a lot.
Good. That's the thing I try to do.
Okay.
Let's get people talking. So see you next week. Bye.
Bye-bye.
cold.